Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts. All you can eat. Well, I'ma stuff my face to a funky beat. We're gonna walk inside and guess
what's up? Put the food on my plate, add some coke in my cup. Well, on Wednesdays, we talk about food, but I want to talk about Kublai Khan, the Mongol leader. You know Kublai Khan?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's a huge historical figure, right? But you know why he's really historic?
The Coleridge poem.
No, no. He had one of the first cookbooks.
His
court chef, yes, wrote a collection of recipes back in the 13th century called The Important Things to Know About Eating and Drinking.
That's amazing.
Cookbooks have been around for centuries. And, of course, this holiday season, you go to your bookshelf, you pull down a cookbook, and it's either going to help you prepare a holiday meal, which
can
be stressful.
Or you leave it on your coffee table for people to stare
at. Exactly. It's a book of dreams, a place to go at recipes that you may never actually prepare, but you can certainly dream about. And the thinking about cookbooks in a deep way is something that Julia Moskin, New York Times food writer, has been doing. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning, John.
And Adam Gopnik, staff writer for The New Yorker, who has a piece all about this in the current New Yorker. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, John.
So what is a cookbook an invitation to do, in your view, Adam?
Well, it seems to me that one of the things that's satisfying, one of the questions is, why do we read cookbooks so much, those of us who love to cook, but know that we're never actually going to do all the recipes, is something internally satisfying about it. You sort of do the recipe in your head as you're sitting there turning the pages, and you have something close to a finished experience just from imagining what it would be like to make those shrimp with oregano and feta.
Now, you describe this experience of imagining with a cookbook and then actually going and making the dish as akin to courtship and marriage, but it's kind of the opposite. With the cookbook, you begin with the ache, hunger, and longing, and end with the object, where in most of the life of appetites, courtship, and marriage, you start with the object and end with the ache.
Isn't it true? we begin by desiring a finished thing, and then we end up disappointed by it in life. But in cooking, we begin with a general desire, and we end up with something to be greedy for.
Now, you describe in your piece, though, that there's a kind of ache that comes from making a recipe and realizing that it's not like your dream.
I've always found that. I don't know if Julia has the same experience, but I've always found since I was a little kid, you know, I first started staying home from school, kind of sneaking away from school, and I was so greedy as a teenager that I would try and make these elaborate pastry recipes, you know, Rigo Yanchi slices full of chocolate and Boston cream pies. And there's always a kind of fall off between your image of what the thing will be and the reality of what the thing is. And I think that that's partly just built into life, but it's partly also because cooking well involves so much, so many acquired skills, so much knack, so
right.
much craft, that you can't get off a page.
Well, Julia Moskin, are there two types of cookbooks on your shelf, the ones that you actually use that are falling apart and the other ones that are maybe a little bit dreamy or untouchable?
Oh, absolutely. There are the ones that we've often written about cookbooks as kind of travel books, but they can also really be a way into someone else's life or into a personality in the same way that people now would have an avatar, perhaps, on the internet.
I like that.
There are those kinds of books where you go to Morocco or you go to Provence and you really learn. And then there are the books that are much more practical. And these are, especially, there's a couple of examples in the new season of just things that you could use every day. And
so,
it's very rare that they're the same book.
So what's an everyday book that's coming out actually this holiday season? Because as we know, cookbooks are big gift items around the holidays. And what are more of the dreamy style?
Sure. I mean, I think for a lot of, you know, Thanksgiving is the time when we stop and take a breath. Don't just make the same three things every week. Think like, what's new? What could I do this year? There's one really interesting book called The Pioneer Woman Cooks, which is by a woman named Ree Drummond, who's actually a blogger who lives in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. And she's also a photographer and homeschools her four children.
Wow.
And although this sounds very daunting, she's very funny. And she took literally thousands of photographs of the process of cooking. So even though she makes a lot of things that are pretty basic, it's really, really step by step so that you see when she says, you know, cook the butter until it's golden, exactly what that means. That might mean different things to different people. That's one of the difficulties of my job when I have to write recipes. who knows what exactly what golden means to different people.
Well, that solves one of the problems that, Adam, that you talked about in your article of what are high peaks of foam, right?
Yeah, exactly. What defines chopped? Exactly. What's a stiff peak and what's a high peak? You know, for me, Thanksgiving is always the holiday of futility, though, because every year I try another way of approaching a turkey. I brine it. I glaze it with tangerine, and it always ends up tasting like turkey.
Exactly. And everything is brined these days. And when I was growing up, you know, salt was something you avoid. What are your favorite recipe books these days? And do they go to the practical or do they go to the poetic?
They tend to be one or the other, I think, as Julia said. One of the books that I've been cooking from a lot has been the Cook's Illustrated collection, More Best Recipes.
Classic. Kimball's right. Classic, of course, familiar to public radio listeners.
And they try 12 different ways of doing something like a gyro sandwich or something, and they finally find the right one. And there's something very encouraging about that. And then on the other end, I particularly enjoyed, having just read about 100 of these things, Michael Salakis's book, How to Roast a Lamb, New Greek Classic Cooking. He's a guy with a couple of wonderful Greek restaurants in New York. And his book is typical of the new cookbooks because it's full of all kinds of intense confessional stuff about his relationship with his father and the first time he actually watched a lamb being slaughtered while he rode on it and the high-pressure hose-like spurting of the blood and all of that. But it also has some terrific recipes for
stuff.
It.
That's not appetizing.
All right, we've got to go. But, Julia, what is the recipe you want to make before the end of your life? Quickly.
Well, right after Thanksgiving, I'm looking forward to making David Chang's roasted Brussels sprouts with fish sauce, mint, and puffed rice from the Momofuku cookbook, which is a whole new level of kind of profanity and confessional
Fabulous.
Conversation in a cookbook.
All right, Julia Musket, New York Times food writer. And Adam, for you, before the end, what recipe do you have to get to?
I want to make a classic French recipe called Filet Boston, a filet of beef stuffed with oysters, with a kind of cream sauce that I have never seen on the menu. I've read about a million times, and I would like someday to make.
All right, Adam Gopnik, staff writer for The New Yorker. For me, it's anything with bone marrow. Celeste?
For me, it would definitely be a confetti cake.